From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gunrunner reaching for the wire. Collectives alongside. And then comes West Coast and War Story. But Gunrunner's on top of the world. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Arrogate is getting going late now. Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected going to win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
But Arrogate swoops up on the outside. America's King Croesus of horse racing went to the front. 200 meters left to go. Arrogate has drawn away from Gunrunner.
Always Dreaming with a 2.5 length lead of 16th to go. Looking at Lee is second. Then comes Battle of Midway, Classic Empire. They're coming to the line, and the dream comes true. Always Dreaming has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Good morning, HRN Nation, and welcome to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, sitting in for the Baron of the Backstretch, Mike Penna. I'm at Aqueduct in Long Shots Down in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios. Is the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and our producer, Lee Delapina. Exciting show for you this morning. Of course, just a week away from the Pegasus World Cup down at Gulfstream, 5 days away from the Eclipse Awards, also down at Gulfstream, and of course, when the calendar changes to the new year, we're automatically on the Triple Crown Trail, just 15 weeks until the first Saturday in May and the Kentucky Derby. Good morning, Jude.
Good morning. How's it going, Big A?
It's going good. Awful quiet in here in Long Shots. You know, since we switched our tack down to Long Shots for the Aqueduct meet, and I've been here parts of Saratoga, did some shows during Belmont from here as well. It's always very bustling. And when I come in here to pinch hit for the Baron, it's always a little eerie. You know, like when you see such a it's like New York City on Memorial Day weekend. You're used to seeing hundreds of thousands and millions of people, and now I'm the only one in here. It's a little eerie this morning.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's quiet here in Lexington today too. There wasn't many people on the road, although I did have a guy tailgate me for a while, but I took care of him. it's kind of quiet. The weather has a lot to do with that. Nobody wants to get up at this hour of the morning, you know, when it's cold outside and dreary and all of that. So it's not so cold this morning. It's in the 30s, but, very cloudy. Looks like it's going to rain any time. And, you know, it's just kind of a quiet Saturday morning in general.
Now, when you're on the road, I know that I do, and I was talking to somebody on Twitter about this yesterday. Horse racing fans on the heavier side, I don't know about you, but I'm a frustrated jockey, and I normally take that out on my fellow automobile drivers. I will, when you said you took care of the guy tailgating you, does that mean you cut him off? You tried to put him over the median? What exactly does that mean?
Well, you know, I was going a decent clip. I wasn't going over the speed limit. I never drive. Trainer Tom Proctor, he told me one time, why get a ticket driving to work? And and I thought that's
great advice.
One of the greatest lines ever, right? So I always keep that in mind. I mean, why are you rushing? You know, first of all, I always leave early. I'm here in plenty of time. So I'm never in a hurry to get anywhere. And I don't know where this person was going and why they were in such a rush. I mean, it wasn't like they were on the road to the hospital or something. And just riding me the whole time. And so, you know, I kind of slowed it down a little bit and just kept getting a little slower and slower, especially as when we approached the signal. And then I kind of blew through the amber and left him in the dust. So it was kind of interesting, but, you know, just a little entertainment on the way to the studio. I don't know why. I mean, you're in Lexington. Where could you possibly be going? Right? I mean, really, in a rush.
At 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, right? It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. Well, maybe he was going to fall one. Who knows?
Yeah. I seriously doubt it.
I'll tell you what. Depending on your age, your level of enthusiasm, your need for speed, to quote Top Gun, driving with a jockey is one of the more interesting tales you'll get to tell in your life. Back in the early 90s, my dad had Julio Pazua's book for the umpteenth time here at Aqueduct in Belmont. And if you're a WWE fan, Yokozuna was the heavyweight champion at the time. And on 4th of July, they had a body slam challenge on the USS Intrepid. And my dad, and they opened it up, obviously, opening it up, you know, it was staged to have super sports stars from various sports. And my dad gets this brilliant idea that he's going to get Pazua and Belmont some exposure, and he's going to call WWF at the time, and he's going to get Pazua to go body slam Yokozuna. So, make a long story short, it all works out. We got to go cut promos in Stanford, Connecticut, WWE headquarters. Pazua rides the 7th on a Thursday afternoon at Belmont, middle of the summer. We leave Belmont at like 3:30, 3:45. Pazua, you know, we got to get to this place by 4:30. Yeah, don't worry. He had a Nissan Pathfinder. And let me tell you something. It was the, depending on how you look at it, the greatest or scariest 22 minutes of my life. That guy got from Belmont Park to Stanford, Connecticut in about 28 minutes. But it was impossible. He was driving on shoulders. He was driving on things that weren't shoulders. He went off-road. My dad was holding on to the handle, white-knuckled, holding on to the handle, getting to this place. It was one of the greatest afternoons of my life. But it was, looking back, it was probably one of the dumbest things I ever took part in.
Yeah, well, you never know about those things. Jerry Galatano, the Chicago jockey, he picked me up to take me to dinner one night. He'd ridden a winner for me at Del Mar, and he wanted to thank me, take me out to dinner. So he picks me up in this beautiful Jag with a cherry wood interior. It was just gorgeous. Car and proceeds to like drive like a bat out of hell. Thank God it was only like a 15 minute ride to the restaurant. I got out of there. I didn't know if I wanted to eat or not.
This was across state lines. This was across state lines.
No, we were not good. We were still in the relative area of the racetrack, but oh my God, it was scary.
Well, hopefully we have a better trip this morning for the next 2 hours than I had going to Stanford, Connecticut with Julio Pazua 25 years ago. Saul Kumin, boy, speaking of bad trips, his prized possession, Lady Eli, his prized, did not have a good one in this past Breeders' Cup filly in mare turf. Officially retired this week. She'll be bred to Warfront. We'll talk to Saul coming up in just about 6 or 7 minutes about his filly, his prized filly, and the plans going forward, as well as her excellent chances for an Eclipse Award this Thursday night in the older filly and mare category. Ron Pollucci, the owner of Luch Racing, now have War Story in the $16 million Pegasus World Cup next Saturday. Ron did a little wheeling and dealing. Sold his spot to the Connections of Sharp Azteca, negotiated another spot that was open, so we'll talk to him about that. I think that's one of the funnest parts of the Pegasus World Cup. We'll talk about a little of that wheeling and dealing with Ron Pollucci in hour number two. Puffy, Sean Feld, the Little Red Feather, the newest consultant over at that partnership. He got that gig this week. We'll talk to Sean about that. And then later on, Trevor McCarthy, who moved his tack from Maryland up here to New York and has been riding very, very well in his first winter at Aqueduct. That's all this morning on the Equine Forum. We also got a poll question for you, HRR Nation. We want to get you involved as well. We have 15 weeks until the Kentucky Derby. Good Magic supposed to work tomorrow. The Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner supposed to work 3 furlongs tomorrow down in Florida. His first action if you will, since that Breeders' Cup Juvenile. We want to know, with 15 weeks left, who's your Kentucky Derby horse right now? Obviously, that's subject to change, and a lot's going to happen in the next few months. But who's your Kentucky Derby horse right now? Head on over to at HRRN on Twitter to answer today's Equine Forum poll question. With 15 weeks to go until the Kentucky Derby, who is your Kentucky Derby horse right now? Jude and I'll talk a little bit about this three-year-old crop. I know he's really, really high on it. He's got his list. He's like Santa a month later. He's got his list and he's checking it twice, getting ready for our three-year-old chat a little bit later on. We'll take our first break. When we come back, we will have Saul Kuhlman, the owner of Lady Eli. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
They're into the stretch. Kador in front. Here's Lady Eli charging on the far outside. Antono sneaks through an opening at the fence. Kador's fighting hard. Lady Eli comes at her from the outside. Antono comes at her from the rail. The three of them battle it out to the wire in the Diana. Here's the finish. It is the gauntless Lady Eli. She has defeated Kedora by a nose. Antono was third. The final time was 1 minute 46.17 seconds. She is indomitable.
Larry Comas on the call of the Diana. It was a heck of a way to get the Saratoga meet started in 2017. Opening weekend saw Lady Eli win the Diana. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. I'm the Big A filling in for the Baron, joined, of course, by Jude Feld as we go out to the phone lines. And a gentleman who's been faced with an awful lot of decisions to make when it comes to the remarkable Lady Eli, one of our owners, Saul Kuhlman, Sheep Pond Partners. Saul, it's Anthony and Jude here on the Equine Forum. Thanks for some time this morning.
Anytime. How's it going, guys? Heard it's nice and cold down there.
Yeah, it's warming up.
Saul, decision made this week to... No, everything's good. You know, good old Lady Eli. Decision made this week to retire her. One of many tough and interesting decisions you've had to make in her remarkable career.
Yeah, I mean, this was the toughest, I think. Everything else was sort of, you kind of just followed your instincts, right? When we brought her back, it was go slow and make sure she was okay and wanted to come back and kind of do a little bit more. This is different. I mean, this was, she, you know, was doing the best she'd really ever done before the Breeders' Cup. She obviously had an outstanding year last year, and you know, we gave her some time. She healed quickly. Most of the cuts were not serious, even though she got pretty banged up in that race. And, you know, we really were debating bringing her back as a six-year-old, at least seeing if she wanted to run, because she had always, you know, kind of loved what she did. And obviously the other option would be, you know, would be retiring her. And we really battled with it for really weeks. And finally came to the decision this week that it was really just, we thought she'd done enough and really earned the right to kind of move on to the next part of her life, which is to be a mom, which hopefully she'll be great at.
She's had such a fantastic career, but she's also had some really horrible setbacks. And getting cut up in the Breeders' Cup was one of them. I mean, not only did it probably cost her the race because she was training just – in outstanding fashion, but then it cost her going to the sale. My daughter Ryan was doing social media for us at Breeders' Cup, and she took a picture of Lady Eli's leg after the race and with the cuts on it. And I wouldn't let her post it. I said, "Yeah, you can't put that up. She has too many fans. That's too ugly to post." You know, and I just felt so badly for her and for you. You guys have been so patient and taken plenty of time with her and given her so many opportunities to excel, and she does it every time. And then to have that happen to her at the end of her career, I just thought that was really a bit of hard cheese.
It was tough, man. I mean, look, we've been super fortunate with her. We've been really fortunate just since we started the sport 3-4 years ago, and you never want to be, you know, a sore loser or make excuses, right? I mean, it's just not a good way to go through life. It was a tough day, right? I mean, if she had run a year before, the perfect example, right? She ran a great race and she got beat by a horse that ran huge and it was an unbelievable ride by Frankie Dettori, and you know, that was a tough loss, but at least we got to see what she can do, and she got beat. This was tough because you just didn't get to see her. And, it turned out to be the last race of her career. And you know, as you alluded to, she had a big fan base and we had a big crew of people there. And it just would have been nice to have seen her just be able to unleash what she was capable of. And if she got beat, she got beat. So be it. But it was tough. I mean, we were sitting kind of right where they come out of that chute and they go around that first turn. And turned out that was right where she lost her shoe, which we obviously didn't find out till after the race. But we could tell something was wrong. I mean, she was getting bumped and she just, you know, flinging her head coming around the corner. And we kind of looked at each other, Jay and I, and we're like, "Oh, that didn't look good." And it turned out we unfortunately weren't able to see what she could do that day. So it was a tough day.
Saul, did that make the decision to retire her that much more tougher because she didn't get to go out like I think a lot of people think Lady Eli should have?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. It made it tougher for me because I felt like I just hated that she didn't win or get to run in her last race. So for me, it did. In a strange way, I think it made it easier for my partner, Jay, and for Chad. And obviously it was really the three of us that were kind of having this conversation in depth for multiple weeks, because I think they were, you know, I think for them, they sort of were more worried about her, thinking of, wow, you know, something small can go wrong. And you know, what if she's been through so much? And I think that weighed pretty heavily on them. So, it's a tough call. Look, if she had run great, won the race, ran second, ran third, we would have paraded her through the sale. And, you know, I wouldn't say it would have been an easy decision, but it was one that we were kind of comfortable making, and we had already really made it. Once we scratched her from the sale because we just thought it was the right thing to do for her, I mean, the idea of shipping her to Kentucky and whatever a few days later, having her prodded out in front of, you know, 100 times a day, it just didn't seem like the right thing to do to her. Then we had more time to think about it. And honestly, to do a bunch of research, right? I mean, you know us pretty well. I mean, we dig in the numbers. And we started looking at, you know, six-year-old mares and you know, what percentage of them can run if they're running well at five. And, you know, you look at Winx in Australia, and you just sort of start looking around saying, maybe we should bring her back. And you have all that time to think about it. And we just, you know, we just feel like we came to the right decision, but it was not easy. I mean, it really, really was not at all.
What about moving forward? Are you guys going to keep her now? Or are you going to put her back in the sale in November? What are you thinking?
Yeah, we're definitely not going to keep her. You know, for us, we've got to focus just on the racing. And we honestly, not to sound harsh, but we kind of need the dollars to recycle into our stable, right? We don't have an endless bit of money, and we're trying to run a top racing stable year in and year out, and you know, she's obviously going to be, you know, impossible to replace for many reasons, but you know, we'll have to use those dollars and do what we can to try. You know, we just don't breed horses. I mean, I have one or two brood mares that and that's it, and they're not of that caliber. So you know, we'll put her in full to Warfront and sell her in full in November with John Secura at the Keeneland sale. And, you know, if the market stays like it's been, I think we have a chance of, you know, doing pretty well with her and hopefully find a great home for her.
Talking with Saul Kuhlman, one of the owners of the Indomitable, as Larry Coleman said in the Diana, Lady Eli. You have a favorite Lady Eli moment or race, Saul?
Oh, favorite race probably was the Breeders' Cup two-year-old year, just because that was really the first time for me. It was sort of probably my third or fourth race I'd ever been to. That was when I realized how special she was, right? I mean, when you watch what she did to that field, that would probably be number one. I mean, you know, this year, every race was so special, right? I mean, even the Gamely in California, I went out there with, just took one of my sons, and you know, watched her win. The Balsam Spa this year at Saratoga was incredible. It turned out to be her last race at Saratoga, where she broke her maiden. You know, the Diana that you guys played earlier. I mean, it's been an incredible run. And, you know, for a couple of guys that really got into the sport knowing nothing and just really getting lucky, we've been, you know, just super fortunate to go on this ride. I mean, she really honestly changed all of our lives. I mean, I can just speak for myself. I mean, I didn't know what a horse was and had never been to a race before. And all of a sudden it's become a big part of my life. And she took us on a journey that, you know, that I'll always be thankful for. So, I'll never forget her.
Yeah. That journey, was gut wrenching at times. I've been in the game a long time, and I can't remember a horse of her quality that's had so many ups and downs. It's just amazing. And I think, luckily for you, you've gotten all that stuff out of the way. You should have some clear sailing from here on in for a while, at least.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll win any more Grade Ones, but we should have some easier management decisions, I guess, going forward. Now, look, we were really lucky, right? I mean, we Chad just, you know, he loves this horse. I think he would say that it's his favorite or one of his favorite horses he's ever been around. You know, the people in his barn took unbelievable care of her, and he, you know, he really guided Jay and I at every turn, just in terms of the decisions that we needed to make, and really made them easier for us. And you know, Chad, over the last 4 years since he's had Lady Eli with him, has grown a lot too, and I think we all learned a ton going through this experience of kind of managing her career through those ups and downs. And they were, you know, people talk about the sport having, you know, the highs and the lows, and you know, that feeling of winning a big race is hard to replicate anywhere in life. And then that feeling of getting a call when your favorite horse is named after your wife has laminitis and probably isn't going to make it, you know, and showing up in the barn and seeing her, you know, legs in ice buckets and looking at her eyes and going, oh my God, this is, you know, that's about as low as it gets, right? So we've sort of been through the whole roller coaster with her, and you know, it's going to be a lot more simple going forward, I think. And it's really just the emotional attachment that we've had with her, not just us, but our friends, our family. You know, when you have a great horse, I think what I didn't realize was how many people come along for the ride, right? You know, you obviously have the fans, but you forget about the breeders. And, you know, with Lady Eli, it was the people that saved her. I mean, Brian Fraley, she would have been dead without him. I mean, he was the podiatrist that worked on her feet, you know, left his family, came in, you know, every couple of weeks to take care of her. You know, I mean, the love that she got from Chad's assistants and the barn and groom and exercise riders. And you just realize that all these people go on this journey with you, and she means a ton to you, but also to all these other people. And that's what makes the sport so special. So going to be a hard one to replicate, but it should be a little bit more simple and stress-free going forward, I think.
Be nice to cap it off with a little Hardware Thursday night, no?
That would be good. We're going to make the trip down to Florida. So we'll see. I mean, you know, we've got three horses that are finalists with Beach Patrol and Mind Your Biscuits, and I don't think that either one of those two will win, but I'll be pretty disappointed if she doesn't. I mean, I think she had a good chance to win it when she was a two-year-old and didn't, and then didn't deserve it the other time she was nominated. I think this time she does. So it would be great to kind of put a nice little cap on it.
All right, Saul, I know you got a board meeting to get to. Thanks for some time this morning. Congratulations with all your success in the game, especially with the one and only Lady Eli. Good luck going forward.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it, guys. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Saul. You too, Saul. All right, Saul Kuhman. Well said, Jude, about how when you have a good one like her, really affects so many people, and a lot of people come along for a ride. I know Cherie DeVoe might come and find me and get me if I didn't mention her by name, because she spent an awful lot of time with Lady Eli, and I know that she's really going to miss her. I know that everybody in that barn's going to miss her, but Cherie's really, really going to miss that filly.
Yeah, well, they become part of you, and Saul is spot on there with all the people that join up. You know, it's amazing. Your friends, that's all everybody wants to talk about when you have a good horse is, you know, how's the horse doing? What are the plans? When's the next race? I want to mark my calendar. I'm going to bring my kids. And, you know, it's fantastic. It's what makes our sport great is the participation, not only of the owners and trainers and, you know, people involved directly with the horse, but the outsiders that come in and learn about the game and appreciate the quality of the horse and become fans. I mean, it makes a big difference.
Well, from the legendary Lady Eli, we'll see if she gets some hardware at the Eclipse Awards up against Stablemate Off Limits, Breeders' Cup filly in there, Turf Victress Wuhita. Two, the Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by the Lexus Store of Lexington.
On an absolutely picture-perfect day for Thoroughbred Racing at Saratoga, the Dowager Empress of American Racing, seven horses were to go postward for the 1941 Hopeful Stakes. This race, the fourth on the day's card, was for two-year-olds, ipso facto, the moniker. It had originally drawn 238 nominees, but that number was cut down to 133 eligibles prior to the race. The reason that a short field of seven went postward was that three of the seven raced as a single betting interest for trainer John Gaver. The Manhasset stable had Amphitheater, the Sir Galahad III colt who had won the Saratoga Special in commanding style. The Green Tree colors were sported by Shutout, the Equipoise colt who had run second in the Special and won the Grand Union Hotel Stakes, and Devil Divers, the other half of their entry. Double Diver was a St. German's colt who'd run second to Shutout in both the Grand Union and the Sanford. Mrs. Payne Whitney owned Green Tree, and her daughter, Mrs. C.S. Payson, owned Manhasset Stable. As an aside, a horse named Buster was in the field, and he was owned by Mrs. Payne Whitney's son, John Hay Whitney. They had, in those days, come to be known as, quote-unquote, the royal family of the American turf. To most observers, the three-horse entry of Devil Diver, Shutout, and Amphitheater looked to be unbeatable. All three had been racing against better company than there was in this field and had scored impressive wins. Shortly after the start, Devil Diver glided to the lead, and his stablemate Shutout was right there, prompting to pace under the venerable heady Eddie Arcaro. Those two were on the lead, on to and around the far turn, with the rest of the small field well bunched and not far back. Around that far turn, there was considerable jockeying for position, which resulted in some bumping. The primary offender was Shutout under Arcaro. Arcaro jostled a challenging Ramillies a good bit amongst others. Devil Diver clung to the lead down the lane, even though tiring a bit in the final furlong, and won it by an open length. Shutout was second by a length, Amphitheater third. So the three-horse entry nailed down the top three spots. In fact, Buster finished fourth, so that the entire amount of the stakes went to the Whitney family. The rest of the story, and the result of a very roughly run race, was that an ask no quarter and give none Eddie Arcaro, who had just resumed riding the previous week after a 30-day suspension for rough riding in Empire City, was once again suspended for his cowboy tactics, so to speak, in this running of the hopeful, pending a hearing, of course. At that hearing, the stewards of the Jockey Club suspended him for the rest of the year. Many thought the suspension should have been for life, since the foul in the hopeful was so blatantly flagrant. You'd think the young, aggressive, and precocious Arcaro would have learned his lesson from that, but not Eddie. Early the next year, in the Cowden Stakes, Arcaro and his mount got bumped just after the start while he was aboard Occupation. The offending rider was Vince Nodarce aboard Breezing Home. Arcaro and Occupation eventually caught up to a Breezing Home and Nodarce in the late stages of that race. Arcaro then brought his mount up outside of Nodarce and Breezing Home and literally tried to put Nodarce over the inside rail. The stewards called Eddie in after the race and asked him just exactly what he was trying to do. Said Eddie, "I was trying to kill that Cuban." For that, Eddie got suspended for 1 year. The hopeful of 1941 in August, and the victory of Devil Diver and Arcaro's rough ride in it, plus the aftermath in Eddie Arcaro's career, a truly memorable, if not great, moment as part of one of the legends of thoroughbred racing.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
What's on your mind, kid? Make it fast.
I'd like to work here at Jimmy John's, world's greatest gourmet sandwich shop, sir.
Why do you want to work at Jimmy John's, kid?
I'm perfect for Jimmy John's.
Doing what?
Delivery.
Delivery?
Delivery.
We deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
That's what I heard.
What'd you hear?
You deliver pretty fast here at Jimmy John's.
Then you heard right.
I'm a fast study, sir.
You know the Jimmy John's slogan?
The Jimmy John's slogan.
Jimmy John's slogan is sub so fast you'll freak.
Sub so fast you'll freak is a swell slogan, sir.
When people call for a Jimmy John's sandwich, they want it fast.
Then I'm your man, sir.
How so?
Because I'm fast.
Fast at what?
Fast at everything.
Can you deliver fast?
I can deliver fast.
How fast?
I can run a 440 in 220.
Minutes?
No seconds.
That's fast. You deliver before?
I delivered newspapers before.
Were you fast?
Very fast.
How fast?
People got tomorrow's paper today.
That's fast.
So do I have the job?
Not so fast. How do I know you're not just some fast talker?
I can get your references.
When?
Now.
These are good references.
Thank you.
But at Jimmy John's, you got to be more than fast.
More than fast.
You got to be polite.
Fast and polite.
Fast and polite.
I can do fast and polite.
Okay, give me some time to think it over.
Okay.
Okay, I thought it over. When can you start?
Now.
Now is good. What's your name, kid?
Stefan Avalapadopoulos.
Too long. How about Ed?
That's fine.
Welcome aboard, Ed.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths.
A five-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
And they're coming down to the finish, and Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
Point of Entry hails from a remarkable female family, with his first four dams Grade 1 winners and or producers. Now with winners in four countries, including stakes winner Glamination and the sensational undefeated graded stakes winner Analyze It, widely regarded as the best turf horse in his crop. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Good Magic is now moved up into second. And then it's the tabulator. Bolt Doro has been very wide on both turns. He'd have to be way the best to win from here. They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Sovomini. And Bolt Doro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile under Jose Ortiz. He won it by 5.5 lengths. Solomini was second. Bolt Doro wide on both turns. Third, Give Me a Minute was fourth.
Good Magic broke his maiden in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Will have his first work back tomorrow in South Florida. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. I'm the Big A in for the Baron, joined as always by Jude Feld. And we got 15 weeks until the Kentucky Derby. That means we have just, about 10 weeks to the Florida Derby. And how would you like to get down to the Florida Derby, HRRN Nation? Well, now you can. Just enter our Road to the Florida Derby Challenge today. Free and easy to play every Saturday now through the Fountain of Youth Stakes on March 3rd. Simply select the horse you think will win the weekly designated contest race today. It's race 11, the Sunshine Million Sprint. Post time is at 5 p.m. down at Gulfstream Park. And you could be on your way to the $1 million Florida Derby on March 31st. For complete rules and to enter your selections each week, head over to horseracingradio.net and click on the contest banner located on the homepage of our website. It's the Road to the Florida Derby Challenge, only on HRRN at horseracingradio.net. Must be good, Jude, to not have the pressure to have to enter this thing. You're going down to the Florida Derby anyway.
Yeah, that's always nice. Florida Derby's always a very exciting race, I think. It's really a reminder that Derby's really close, and by then you've kind of sorted out the horses a little bit and have your absolute favorites that you just hope stay in one piece and continue to improve as they head towards Kentucky. So it's an exciting time of year.
So Good Magic, you know, as deep as you and I both think, and I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but we've talked about this enough where this is a nice group, nice crop of three-year-olds right now. Good Magic getting back to work. There's almost been a little mystery to, and I think it's a little more so this year, a little interesting that Good Magic's not coming back to the work tab until 3 weeks into the new year. The mystery of Montauk finally getting solved, I think. I feel like Montauk could have very well showed up on Storage Wars when somebody just opened an old storage. Look, it's Montauk. I bought this thing for $1,700, and I got Montauk in here. Starting to figure things out here a little bit. But, you know, it's funny. I don't want to say it's like you forget the Breeders' Cup winner, but we've been treated to so many good performances since the Breeders' Cup and so much hope with the crop that it almost feels like they weren't missing that much.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I think we've had a real cornucopia of talented horses running early in the year, and so it's not like everybody was, you know, just waiting, anticipating what Good Magic was going to do. And I think the fact that Good Magic broke his maiden in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile also kind of tempered people's enthusiasm maybe a little bit, you know, because we don't really know how good of a horse he is. I mean, he was great on that day, but we know that horses change, horses develop, some two-year-olds don't get any better. So I think he's a little bit of a mystery horse to a lot of people, and you know, he hasn't had that anticipation that some of the other Breeders' Cup Juvenile winners have had, that, you know, people can't wait to get him back to the track. So I think there's several factors at play with that. And, of course, the other thing, Chad Brown, I mean, he's a guy who's noted for, you know, giving horses breaks and bringing them back fresh and that kind of thing. So you know, the whole composite life of Good Magic is maybe not normal, if you want to say that, by Triple Crown standards.
Chad just 0 for 4. Chad Brown just 0 for 4 in the Kentucky Derby. You'd have to think, though, Good Magic, even though he's been away since the Breeders' Cup, he's certainly, his form's been flattered. Solomini came back, and you and I'm grudgingly getting used to the fact that we're not calling him the winner of the Los Al Futurity. Ferenc Fire came back off of a subpar effort in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and beat not the toughest field in the Jerome, but he handled a messy wet track here at Aqueduct. He was one of could have been the only horse all day to overcome a pretty substantial speed bias. So, you know, Good Magic, though he's just a one-time winner, the horses he kept company with in two of his three starts, the maiden that beat him on debut for Pletcher really hasn't run that well. But, you know, the horse that beat him in the Champagne came back to win off the layoff, and Solomini ran the winning race in the Los Al Futurity.
Yeah, Solomini, you know, he's got a lot of talent and a lot of upside now. I guess he got a little sick, too. So he's going to have his debut delayed. The other big horse, Bolt Doro, he had a muscle pull in his back. He's due to work here in the next day or so. So those two horses had setbacks. But we've certainly had other horses come to the fore that have really been impressive in their victories. I thought Instilled Regard was just sensational. He gave you that Derby horse feeling when he won the other day. Very relaxed horse, went about his business very professionally. Just looked sharp, winning. I was super impressed. I would say he was visually impressive, you know, in the LeCompte. Another horse that I think was visually impressive was Catholic Boy. Now, he's trained at a training center, so he's not a horse that's in the news all the time. But he kind of gives me that Barbaro feel, a turf horse that runs great on the dirt, too. And he's a big, strong horse. He's a good-looking horse. A lot of sharp people are trying to get a piece of him. And, you know, I think those two horses, for me, have stood out early on this year.
He's got that Remsen, Catholic Boy, got that Remsen curse, if you will, to deal with. And Remsen's near and dear to my heart. I've watched almost every Remsen live for 35 years. It just has not been a race recently that has produced any real Derby contender. It's weird because you get the 9 furlongs as a 2-year-old late in November. This year was the first week in December, but it's kind of counterintuitive that it doesn't help along the way. But recent history shows that race has been there's been some voodoo on that race when it comes to the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the placement of the race or, you know, maybe the mile and an eighth has something to do with it, because we know Catholic Boy can stay, and some of the horses that run in there can't stay. So right away, you know, the horses that got tired in the Remsen are probably not Derby horses, unless there was some extenuating circumstances. But I think, you know, Catholic Boy had done enough prior to running in the Remsen that would make you think he might be a Derby horse if he could handle the dirt. And he certainly answered that question. You know, so I just like how he looks. I think his trainer, Jonathan Thomas, is one of the sharpest guys around. I just think, you know, there's a little something extra with him. It you know, it's like anything else. I mean, these opinions that I have of certain horses, they're more gut feelings than anything else. You know, horses that just look the type or have that style that you like to see coming into the Derby. And then I'm kind of like, you know, horses like McKenzie, who have speed, who run on speed favoring racetracks, who beat, you know, fields that may be a little bit suspect. They're always not as appealing to me, but, you know, you can't take anything away from McKenzie. I mean, he's run like a freak. His speed figures have been excellent. Mask, he came back in great shape. Marino, he came back looking good. So, I mean, there's a steady stream of horses that have really, you know, looked sharp in their races this year. I thought Combatant ran really good the other day. I think he's a horse that's on the move. Steve Asmussen, you know, his horses get better with racing, and I think Combatant has a bright future. And you and I were talking this morning off the air about Enticed. So there's plenty of horses that you know are not really outliers that could actually, you know, have a major impact on the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. Dale Romans, of course, has a bunch. We saw Sporting Chance work, and Gary Stevens and Wayne Lucas getting back. Sporting Chance was a big horse at two, and he got hurt. He was operated on to come back, and he's training good. So there's lots of interesting possibilities moving forward.
Yeah, and, you know, Chad Brown, who has Mask, has good magic. You wonder if anybody else on the heels of Catholic Boy doing so well on the surface switch. West Point has Untamed Domain, who ran well up in Canada and then ran very well in the Breeders' Cup. And Chad Brown has Analyze It, who I don't know if you can, you know, regardless of surface, if you can find a more talented or eye-opening two-year-old last year. You wonder if at some point it's too difficult to pass up the idea of, you know, well, if this horse can do this on dirt, we got ourselves a pretty good racehorse on our hands. You always throw that part of it in. I'll tell you what, this probably wouldn't be the year we saw Wonder Godot from Mark Cassie. She was cross-entered in the LeCompte and the Silver Bullet Day, wound up running the Silver Bullet Day. I don't know if with this crop you want to take too many chances. I don't know if you want to try and turn turf horses into dirt horses or try fillies, because there's enough. I mean, we haven't even talked about Boldoro, and, you know, he was a horse where 4 months ago he was the bee's knees. It was done. Now he pulled a little bit of a muscle. He was supposed to come back in the San Vicente at 7 furlongs. That's a move that I love. We saw Doug O'Neill use it successfully in 2016 with Nyquist, bring him back sprinting. That's as old school as it gets. He's going to miss that. He looks like Boldoro's going to go San Felipe, Santa Anita Derby, Kentucky Derby, provided all goes well. But, I mean, you know, I'm not a big math guy. I've never made money thinking a horse race was a math equation. But he lost something like 75. He traveled like 75 more feet than Good Magic in the Breeders' Cup. For a young horse losing all that ground, that's a long way. So, you know, I always thought he could be anything. I was really impressed with Mask. And I got a couple of our listeners, Jude, that are on the Bolt Oral. Ken Hamilton and our boy Jay Dalascar, they're both on Bolt Oro. And Jessica says, any curling in regards to our poll question this morning. That's a good one. It's sort of like me when the Belmont comes. Just point me to the tap it way,
yeah.
And I'm ready to roll.
Well, that makes Solomini certainly yeah. one of the contenders. And, of course, he is. So, you know, it's even when you get down past like the top 10 or 12 or whatever, I mean, we saw Axeman win on New Year's Day. He looked like he could be something. Tis Mischief, maybe Dale Roman's best opportunity. There's lots of horses out there that All Out Blitz ran good the other day. He kind of popped up from nowhere. And then there's been some maidens lately that have been impressive. Alternative Route, Al Stahl's horse out at Fairgrounds, and Peace, Richard Mandela's horse. Peace made Jeff Siegel's list, I think top 20 at least. He might have been up to 18. But, I mean, he's a horse that – has a high ceiling and a Hall of Fame trainer. And so there's a lot of horses coming into the picture now that might actually have, an opportunity to win the Kentucky Derby that we haven't seen their best or even seen them run against, more formidable competition.
As far as Derby points go, Good Magic leading the way with 24. Friends Fire, McKenzie tied for second and third with 20. And then we got Bolt Oro and Solomini tied for fourth with 14 points. And I couldn't help myself, Pontiff. 105 days, 8 hours, 4 minutes, and 46 seconds until this year's Kentucky Derby. That was for you, Baron, if you're listening. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get you set for an action-packed hour number two here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Verrazano, brilliant winner of 6 of his first 7 starts, including the Grade 1 Wood Memorial.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Verrazano!
And the Haskell, by a record 9 3/4 lengths, earning a buyer figure of 116, the highest of any 3-year-old in 2013.
And Verrazano and John Velasquez have blown away the competition.
Verrazano, a great-looking son of More Than Ready, standing in Ashford.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Hey, the holidays are over. It's January. But why not continue that holiday feeling at Tony's? Great food, great service, and that family atmosphere that everyone has come to love. Right across from Triangle Park, it's Tony's Steaks and Seafood. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com and keep the holidays going.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Play the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park every Friday through Sunday. Host time is 12:30 p.m. Today, Laurel Park features two $100,000 stakes, the Fireplug and the What a Summer. Watch and wager on fantastic Maryland racing. The wagering menu includes Super High 5, Pick 5, and the Rainbow 6. Visit laurelpark.com for more information. That's laurelpark.com.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Coming to the top of the stretch,
Sunny Ridge is the leader. Manny Franco takes a peek back to Brutus. Keeps on battling him on the inside, and they turn for home together. War Story is third. Governor Malibu cuts the corner. And do you know something? And they're coming to the final furlong. Sunny Ridge is the leader. War Story runs at him. To Brutus is given in. War Story! War Story has taken the lead under Javier Castellano, and they're pulling away late. It is War Story, indefatigable, in the Brooklyn by three lengths over Sunny Ridge. To Brutus was third, and Governor Malibu was fourth in a final time of 2 minutes 31.02 seconds.
Larry Comas using more big words on Belmont Stakes Day in the Brooklyn. War Story got the money. We'll talk to his owner, Ron Pellucci, coming up in hour number two here on the Equine Forum. Welcome back to the program. You know, Pontiff, we always talk about the boys. You got a filly on your mind for the Kentucky Oaks yet, or is that still right? The races are treated differently, yet the end game is kind of the same.
Yeah, I usually reserve my Oaks picks for closer to the race. You know, I don't know what it is about the Oaks fillies, but it seems like a lot of them take turns, and you know, the mile and an eighth thing for them is important. So I usually watch them, but I don't really you know, go crazy. I was kind of interested in Wonder Godot, but I was surprised that I really didn't like her in either race last week. Because I thought her form was pretty good. You know, she ran decently in the Breeders' Cup. She came back and won at Remington, and I thought, oh, I'm going to be, you know, all in on this filly. And then when I looked at
She actually won here. She actually won the Demoiselle here.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. When I went and did the pace figures and stuff, I kind of cooled on her a little bit, and I really didn't like her in either spot. But that doesn't mean she can't win the Kentucky Oaks. I still think the ability's there. But I think sometimes the trainers train the fillies a little bit more gingerly. And, you know, it's always been my experience with fillies. You have to let them do what they want. You can't, like, force them into anything, which some of the colts, you can make them do things. So I think it's just, you know, my basic philosophy with fillies, kind of the same of my philosophy with women. You know, let them call the shots. You'll be way better off.
And it's kind of the Oaks is more of a conventional race. You know, not all of the fillies in the Oaks, but most of them have run a mile and an eighth, or at the very least, they've all gone a mile and a 16th, and it's only an extra mile. Whereas with the Derby, unless they're coming over from Dubai, they've haven't come close to the mile and a quarter. And you just, I always feel like when you handicap the Oaks, it's almost like you're just handicapping a conventional race, whereas the Derby, there are so many intangibles to take into account, especially that final furlong, that, you know, unless I really, really, really love one, I'm the same way. I kind of feel like a couple weeks out, you can really start to do the work on the Oaks, whereas you started your Derby list in August at Saratoga.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, one of the reasons I do that is because there's such a focus on the Triple Crown races, and you know, I get asked a lot of questions, and I like to, you know, have a base. I like to have that backup knowledge, and especially when we're on the air doing the Triple Crown races, it helps me to, you know, focus on those horses and be able to answer questions without having to look at PPs, without, you know, having to refer to notes or whatever. So that's why I start that so early. That coupled with the fact that Mike and I play in the Churchill Downs fantasy contest. So I like to know what's going on as far as that's concerned. But, you know, I've had the best luck in the Oaks with observation. Fillies that I've seen run, that I've, you know, watched on television or whatever, how they run, what kind of trouble they encounter, what their running styles are. And I think the Kentucky Oaks especially is more of a race that is current form related. You know, I mean, even more so than the Derby. You never want to bet on a Derby horse that hasn't, you know, run well in their most recent start. I mean, they hardly ever win. But the Oaks is really about, you know, who's in condition, who's going to get the trip, and who is at the top of their game. And I think part of the reason that that race is like that is there's really not a follow-up, you know? Like the Derby horses, if you win the Derby, you're going on to the Preakness, right? I mean, unless, you know, you've had an injury or something in the Derby. So you're
going to... You're not going to the Black-Eyed Susan necessarily.
Yeah. Very rarely do horses go to the Black-Eyed Susan from the Kentucky Oaks. It's a racing rarity nowadays. So their schedule is more spread out over time. So the trainers can actually focus on honing a horse in for that particular race. And I think it's part of the whole thing.
Well, I'm not going to give you an Oaks countdown. Just subtract a day from the Derby countdown a few minutes ago. All right. Hour one is in the books. We're back with hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Forever Unbridled. Abel Tasman charging but running out of time. Forever Unbridled's going to do it. Forever Unbridled has won the Breeders' Cup Distaff. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Originating from our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Shaman Ghost is trying to get into second, then Neolithic. Back forth is Noble Bird, followed by Keen Ice. But what a race! What a sport! What a horse! Arrogate romps in the Pegasus. He won it by 3.5.
They're into the stretch. Good Magic's in front. Good Magic pulls away from Solomini, and Boldoro will not get there today. Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Now, here's Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm the Big A, Anthony Stabile, in for the Baron, Mike Penna. I'm up at Aqueduct in Long Shots, down in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studios, is the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, and our producer, Lee Della Pina. No stallion in my long memory has made a more sensational start at stud than Uncle Mo. Those were the words of John Sparkman in a recent column for the Daily Racing Form following another stellar weekend from the progeny of Coolmore America's Uncle Mo, the recently crowned leading third crop sire. Skills were on display from coast to coast as he added two new graded stakes winners on turf and dirt. On the East Coast, Ultra Brat won the Grade 3 Marshawes River at Gulfstream, and out west, Mopetism won the Grade 2 La Cunada Stakes at Santa Anita. Uncle Mo's oldest crop has just turned 5, and he has already sired 17 graded stakes winners. Sensational indeed. For more information on Uncle Mo and all their stallions, head on over to coolmore.com. You had Ultra Brat last week. Did you not, Pontiff?
Yes, I did. It was a nice wager, Ultra Brat. I thought that was a good price, and very happy with the result.
And I say had him last week. That was on the weekend stakes preview presented by Naira Betts. This week's is up, 11 stakes races. Head over to horseracingradio.net when we wrap up, or stay there if you're listening to us on our live stream, and give the weekend stakes preview a listen back. Jude's 2-for-2 with his Naira Betts best bets of the year, and we'll see if he can keep that streak going at 3. All right. There is a streak in next Saturday's Pegasus World Cup that our next guest, Ron Pellucci, the owner of Luch Racing, is going to start, if you will. They've run just two. Well, they've run just one Pegasus World Cup. Number two will be about a week from now. And the only horse that'll start in both Pegasus World Cups is his War Story. Ron joins us now from Gulfstream. Ron, it's Anthony and Jude here on the Equine Forum. What's happening?
Good morning. Great morning out here in Florida.
Yeah. Be there Wednesday.
All right, so you're down there on scene at Gulfstream?
Yes. Yeah, I just left Gulfstream Park West where I watched Sharp Ass Tekka work, War Story work, Moves Like Ali, and now I'm over at the actual Gulfstream watching a couple of my newly turned three-year-old fillies, Breeze.
All right, talk to us a little bit about the moves from Sharp Azteca and War Story, how they go.
War Story was just a maintenance work. He got his final work in. You know, the major work was last week. He worked 59, galloped out 11 and change in company for him, which is a pretty fast move. He's not a great workhorse, but worked very good. The antithesis of that maintenance work was Sharp Azteca, who worked, I mean, I don't even know what you can say about the work. He worked 110. He just kept getting faster and faster as the work went on. And, I mean, if ever there was a statement work, it was this morning from Sharp Azteca.
He's an amazing horse. He just fires every time, and he's got blazing speed. But 110, that seems maybe a tad fast. What do you think?
Well, you'll get to watch it on XBTV, and honestly, I read didn't ask him an inch. He came down, he went the first 3/8 and 35, and came past us at the wire, and you could just see visually he was picking it up without being asked. And you know, I think a big misnomer about this horse is he's blazing fast. The last two works I've watched him last week and this week, at the end of the work, he was moving faster than he was at the beginning of the work. You know, I think if they take a different strategy and don't gun him out of there, you know, kind of like they did in the Cigar Mile, after watching him breeze today, I'll tell you, I don't know. They're going to have to run to beat that horse if he runs like he breezes the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, because that's 35 for the first 3/8 and 35 for the last 3/8. That's pretty impressive, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
So, Luch, you had a spot in the Pegasus World Cup. You negotiated, sold your spot to Ivan Rodriguez, who owns Sharp Azteca. Turned around, there were three available spots, negotiated a different spot for your War Story. Now, I think when the concept of this race first came out and the idea of you were buying a slot in the starting gate and all that goes with it from the Stronach Group, I think people were going to be very interested in the wheeling and dealing that goes into, you know, last year we saw that, you know, Arrogate obviously came along after all the spots were gone and Judmont needed a spot, and they worked out a deal with Coolmore. Coolmore is going to run their newly acquired Stellar Wind this year. If you don't mind, give us a little insight into the wheeling and dealing, because I think that's a part of this event that people are interested in that, frankly, we didn't get too many salacious details about last year.
Well, I think with the purse structure the way it is, them paying all 12 slots and really minimizing your risk, it kind of inhibits the wheeling and dealing a little bit, because there's really no room, unless you're an ultra aggressive guy like myself that you know, wants to win the race. There's just not a lot of wiggle room unless you've got an arrow gate or a gun runner. So I'm gonna petition the powers to be next year to maybe only pay down to 6, let 7 through 12, you know, get 0, make more money at the top. That way, when there's a Sharp Azteca that comes around, you know that he's going to be in the race, because if you're making $150,000 for running fifth, now you can guarantee him $75,000 and get those horses in there. Whereas now, if you don't run third, you don't make your money back. So I'm a guy that kind of thinks outside the box, and I've gone to the powers to be and let them know that if they want to fill these slots quicker, you know, they need to change the payout structure. So while there was wheeling and dealing on my part, you know, I was the only one really aggressive enough to get a sharp Aztec in the race. So they need to change the payout structure to make more wheeling and dealing available.
It seems like there's a situation that's developed the last couple of years where there's, you know, just one or two big horses in the race, and then everybody else fills out the spots. Can you foresee a situation where you might have five or six top horses in the race at one time?
Well, I think so if you change the payout structure, because here's the thing. If you give people the opportunity to make money, they're going to, if they believe they can win, it's risk reward in this circumstance. Okay. So if I know that I can run third and make $250,000, if I've got the third best horse in the race, even though I'm running against a gun runner, I'm still going to buy a slot, because you got 8 or 9 weeks to the race. You never try to duck one horse, and it makes it worth your while to run if you know you're going to make money. But if you've got a horse that's on the cusp, let's say a War Story, you know, he ran a great race in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but if I had to put up $1 million to run him this year, I wouldn't have done it. So it really inhibits the horses that have, you know, that are the 10, 15 to ones that you want in the race that make it more intriguing when you don't have the ability to make that kind of money. So if you're asking me, do I see it? Yes, because I believe they're going to change the payout structure next year. So I think you'll get the top five horses in the race next year, or top six horses in the race. So the only way to do that is to change the payout structure. Without that, you're not going to have guys willing to put up the money if they won third to lose money, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So to answer your question, yes, I think it'll happen next year. It's just they've got to rechange the payout structure just a little bit.
Talking with Ron Pellucci, owner of Looch Racing. His War Story all set for next week. $16 million Pegasus World Cup. You'll hear it right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, our first live race broadcast of the year. Ron, you talk about thinking outside the box a little bit. You were a fan of this concept, even though you think there needs to be a tweak or two from day one. Would you like to see more of this in racing?
More of the Pegasus World Cup type thing? Is that what you're asking me? Absolutely. I think anything that brings the attention to the horse racing world and brings the casual fan in, like the Breeders' Cup or the Pegasus World Cup, I'm for it. You know, part of the reason I made the deal for Sharp Azteca is because I love horse racing and I think it's a better race with him in it. First and foremost, I love the game. And, you know, I'm always trying to bring new people in and get people involved and get people interested, because you never know who that next, you know, e-racing is, E5 Racing or Ron Pellucci from Looch Racing. And the sport's better with more people in it and more people that are willing to put up a few dollars and reinvest it. And so my whole goal is to bring people to the races, and I love it. I'm a sportsman first. People think I'm a little crazy and a little outside the box, but the first thing I love is I love the sport. I love the game, and whatever I can do to help bring people to it, I'll do it. You know, if I ran a contest and I'm going to give $100,000 away if War Story or Sharp Azteca wins, to try to get people involved in the race, try to get people involved in the sport. And all you got to do is make a $10 win wager on War Story to be able, and if Sharp Aztec or War Story wins, I'm going to give $100,000 away to people that made a wager on that horse. So, you know, I think it's just a way to bring people into the game. If
this changed now, because I originally thought it was just War Story. So if War Story or Sharp Aztec win, you're giving the $100,000 away?
Yeah. What? The only one you can bet, though, is War Story, okay? Because I don't own the other horse, and I don't want to inhibit people's odds. You know, it wouldn't be fair to the other owner to drive, you know, if he's looking to, I don't know if he wagers or not, but, you know, War Story's my horse. So if you have a $10 win wager, either at the track, through Express Bet, or Twin Spires, You will be put into a drawing. First prize is going to be 50,000, then 20, and then 10, and then 5, and then, you know, I'm going to give away 15 $1,000 winners, and we're going to draw it live on, well, I'm going to videotape it on Twitter, and once the names are pulled, I'm just going to verify it through either TwinSpires or ExpressBet, and we're going to give the money away. So you have to bet $10 to win on War Story, but if either horse wins, I'm giving the $100,000 away to people.
Oh, that's wow. Cool. That's very cool. Very sporting of you.
Well, listen, I love the game, you know, and I want people to bet the race, and I want people to watch the race, and I want people to have a vested interest, and, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that bet $10 and win on War Story. They're going to be rooting for Sharp Azteca, you know, and that's kind of the idea, you know, get people involved. So I wish more owners would do it. You know, these people, they'll put up $1 million, they win $5 million, but they won't give anything back to the fans or the sport. And I think you should give back. Without the guys betting $10, there is no sport. You know, you don't have to bet $10 million to be in this game. You know, I was a $10 better my whole life until, you know, I was very fortunate in business and Ria Antonia. And so, you know, you don't have to bet $10 million to be involved in the sport. And I think that's kind of the idea of the game, you know, of this project that I'm doing for this race. So
I know you started out the week good back on Monday, a filly who's really near and dear to your heart. Heaven Has My Nikki won her second race. She's a perfect 2 for 2 now. How'd she come out of the race, and what are the plans for her?
She came out unbelievable, you know. And I've gotten this question probably 50 times since she's run last, you know. Do you think she should have been in the Breeders' Cup? I absolutely think she should have been in the Breeders' Cup, but I'm absolutely positively happy that she wasn't. You know, sometimes you get caught up in that hype and, you know, you watch a filly work, and she's worked against a couple people or a couple horses that have run in graded stakes, and you're thinking, well, this is kind of a weak group of fillies, so let's put her in there. And you know, hindsight being 20/20, I think it's the best thing for the horse, for me, for the trainer, you know. But that being said, just because something has never been done before doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. And you'll see over the next couple of years with me trying to enter her that somebody will get it done and probably will win. So, you know, just because it hasn't been done doesn't mean it shouldn't be done. And, you know, there's exceptions to every rule. This filly, she did something the other day. She, you know, she don't want to sprint. She got left, got stopped a few times. And, you know, there's a good future for that filly. So, you know, came out of the race great. Not sure where she's going to go next, but we're just going to let her tell us.
You've got a big
all right, Ron,
chance
thanks
today
for some time.
In the Las Cienegas at Santa Anita with a filly that has only run on the turf one time. Now she's going down the hill. She looks like she's training pretty good. Good luck to you this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks. That was Phil's call. He really wanted to run this filly on the turf. She's been training lights out. We're completely stupefied by Kent DeSormo's ride in the Breeders' Cup Philly and Mayor sprint, and so we're going to be on the engine today. Going to be on the chooch. So let's see what happens.
All right,
Lucha on the chooch. You got a lot of weight on her back. I picked her, just so you know.
Well, Phil's picking her too, and he's a pretty sharp guy. So hopefully, you guys are both right.
All right, Ron. Thanks for some time this morning. I'll give you a call later on.
Thank you.
All right, Ron Pellucci from Looch Racing. He's a character, Jude.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's an interesting guy. He has some unique thoughts, and there's nothing wrong with that. So it's okay to have unique thoughts and do some out of the box things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Looch, like all of our guests, including Saul Kuhlman earlier, will get some apparel from Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion over at EmbraceTheRace.com. It's time now for the Bloodhorse News Update. And look at the top headlines from Bloodhorse.com. Second EHV1 positive extends quarantine at Belmont. New York Racing Association announced January 19th that a precautionary quarantine at Belmont Park's Barn 44 remains in place after a horse that tested positive for equine herpes virus 1 again came back with a positive result on a follow-up test. The EHV1 positive test for a horse trained by Linda Rice has led to a ban by the Maryland Jockey Club of 3 Barn 44 to share Life in Shambles and Chief Lion that was scheduled to race in the Fireplug Stakes at Laurel Park January 20th. The affected horse in Barn 44, a 3-year-old male that has not yet raced, first tested positive January 9th. Nye replaced the horse in an isolation barn immediately after the first positive test was revealed at the Cornell Ruffian Equine Hospital, where the horse was treated for a fever and what was described by officials as a mild respiratory issue. That wraps up this morning's edition of the Blood Horse News Update. Have the latest racing, breeding, and industry news, as well as analysis, entries, results, race replay videos, and more at your fingertips with the Blood Horse Daily app. It's updated throughout the day or can be delivered to you in an email. Both are free. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to download the app or sign up today. That equine herpes virus, Jude, nothing to mess with. Nyra Aaron on the side of here and going to keep that barn in quarantine.
That's going to have some effect on the Laurel races as well, I think. There's going to be some scratches this afternoon.
Three horses coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Hopefully they can get their hands around this sooner rather than later. Nothing else happened really here so far. You know, again, Aaron on the side of caution, I completely get it. Hopefully this gets rectified sooner rather than later. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, Sean Feld, the newest consultant over at Little Red Feather Racing, will join us. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Power.
Carrick Condi, the favorite in front, the Spaniard News Al Canarias is fighting back. Carrick Condi has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Carrick Condi winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Carrick Condi with a rush on the outside goes Bannon. Lead run from Adam Dahl. Carrick Condi and O'Dahl. Carrick Condi.
Gainsway stallion Carrick Condi. The regally bred Breeders' Cup Mile winner recorded 3 Grade 1 victories on his way to earning more than $1.9 million. A precocious juvenile, Carrick Condi recorded a Grade 1 win at 2 before taking the prestigious French 2000 Guineas at 3, followed by an electrifying stretch run in the Breeders' Cup Mile to defeat older horses with a final time of 1:32 4/5. Carrick Condi's first weanling sold for up to $250,000 with an average of more than $68,000. Carrick Condi, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
Fans, come join us for great racing and good times at the Great Race Place this weekend. And please note, Santa Anita now offers fans free parking and admission for simulcast wagering on tracks across North America each Wednesday. Make plans now to watch and wager on the world's richest race, the $16 million Pegasus World Cup Invitational from Gulfstream Park next Saturday, January 27th. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
We've watched him develop into a racehorse.
Into Mischief wins the cup, Corky Terry!
Into a sire.
Golden Sensei, scintillating performance.
It is Practical Joke in the Allen Jerkins.
Into a leader. The leading 2-year-old and 3-year-old sire of 2017. Into Mischief, standing at Spendthrift Farm.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
They're well inside the final half furlong. It's Taste of Texas. Taste of Texas, another stakes for Florent Giroux. Taste of Texas driven out.
Tower of Texas, the son of Darley Stallion Street Sense, scored in the $125,000 Colonel E.R. Bradley Stakes on turf at the fairgrounds this past weekend, recording his 4th career stakes victory with a 94 buyer speed figure. That makes Tower of Texas your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, the first horse to win both the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the Kentucky Derby. Street Sense is the sire of six individual Grade 1 winners on dirt over the past 5 years. Only Tappet, Curlin, and Darley Stallion Bernardini have more. To learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And Pluvin is the leader with Miss Temple City drawing alongside. And then Tourist, who's third, just over a quarter mile out. Grand Arch looks for room fourth toward the inside. Then What a View, Ring Weekend, who swings out to the center of the course, six lengths off the lead. Miss Temple City is the leader. What a View needs room. Tourist is there on the outside. And still Pluvin fighting on down toward the inside. Miss Temple City with the lead in the final furlong of the Shadwell Turf Mile. And here comes a late charge from Ironicus, way out on the grandstand side. Miss Temple City, Ironicus charging. Miss Temple City appeared to hang on with the head bob from Ironicus in 1 minute 37 seconds.
HRN's own Kurt Becker on the call of the Shadwell Turf Mile. Miss Temple City beat the boys that day. Beat them a couple of times back in 2016. Welcome back to the Equine Forum. The Big A and the Pontiff taking you through a sensational Saturday morning. Joined now, Jude, by someone you've known a long time. I've known him quite a while.
I'm his godfather.
Wow. I didn't know that. I just thought it was uncle.
That too.
he's been my co-host on HRR. I have the old version of Express Bet Radio on HRRN. We even did a horse deal together with the club. I sold one for the club. Sean Feld, newest consultant for Little Red Feather. Puffy, what's happening?
Not a whole lot. Thanks for having me on.
Is this an okay time for you? It's not too early, is it?
It's a tad early after a holiday party that was rescheduled, but I'll fight through.
You know, when I asked you yesterday what your favorite, it's funny, we had Saul Kuhlman on earlier, and Jude and I asked him live what his favorite Lady Eli moment was. It took him a little while to, I think, come up with that answer. I asked you yesterday what rejoin you wanted me to play, and you snap called me with the Shadwell Turf Mile. I find it interesting how we're all in the same game, yet it takes us time to get to answer certain questions.
Yeah, I mean, with her, all of us probably have 10 favorite ones, but to me, the Shadwell was kind of that was the race that a lot of people thought we were stupid to run in. But we were ultra confident in our decision to run against the boys that day. Where the first time we ran against the boys, we admitted we were duck and tep. But the second time, we actually thought we were if not the same, but better than the boys at that time. We did it. It was a lot of fun that day. It just really... And unfortunately, she didn't have a really good year this year, but that definitely was kind of like her pinnacle was beating the boys that second time in the million-dollar race.
You know, Anthony brought up the fact that I've known you for a long time, your whole life, basically. But I was thinking about it when the announcement came out that you were going to work for Little Red Feather, and I said, I believe I've only seen two men in Little League uniforms at Santa Anita in my lifetime, and that would be Billy Koch, the master of Little Red Feather, and you. I've known both of you guys since you were very young. I came in a little later with Billy Koch, but his grandfather Howard Koch was a good friend, a fantastic guy, and Billy used to come out in his Little League uniform to watch his grandfather's horses run. And then I thought to myself, yeah, I've seen Sean out at the track in his Little League uniform too. Although I have your rookie card, which not too many people have.
Yeah, there's not many additions to that, that's for
I have a great, one of my favorite pictures that I have is of me and Alan Jerkins, one of the nights after Sky Beauty won one of the 60 grade ones, or whatever, however many she won, at King Umberto's restaurant. So you've never seen that yet, and I wouldn't fit in my Little League uniform anymore, I don't think. Puff, what? This is a little bit of a new venture for you. You've done a lot, obviously, with your dad and your uncle, and a lot of stuff, you know, for a young guy, a lot of stuff on your own. Actually going to work with, for, whatever word you want to use, with people now is going to be a little bit of a little different. Talk about some of the challenges that come along with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Billy. I was actually at Little Red Feather's very first start way back in the day, a horse called Spoon Man. And I've watched Little Red Feather grow organically from day one. You know, they've wanted me to work for him for a while. I just felt this was the right time. They're very, very prominent in California. I mean, they're easily the leading partnership group in California right now. And they're looking to expand east. And they and I think I would be a perfect person to help them grow organically the way that they did as well. So I think it's going to be a fun challenge. You know, they want to be in the same breath as Eclipse and West Point. And luckily for me, they thought I'd be the perfect person for that.
Well, when you start your new gig, which I guess it's already started, what areas are you going to be focusing on the most, and what parts of the country are you going to try to hit first?
Well, they already have had a couple horses in New York. They'd like to grow there quite a bit, but they've never really had any in Kentucky or Florida. They would like, you know, more in New York only because obviously it's much more of a bigger market than Kentucky and Florida. But they definitely want to start more in the Midwest because they've never really had any presence at all in the Midwest, where they have a core group of guys in New York, but they want to grow that as well. But basically, it's whatever I can get for them is kind of my goal in any three of those areas, basically.
So are you going to look to buy horses, to claim horses? What's the business model?
Right now the plan is to get a handful of horses at the two-year-old sales. And actually yesterday we talked about finding some stuff privately. There's really no set plan, which is kind of was nice for me to hear, is because, you know, in horse racing, there's no plan is the best plan. You just kind of have to let it happen. But we're definitely going to start doing stuff in the spring because obviously, you know, late January, early February, there's not a whole lot going on public sales-wise. So if we can find one or two privately, we'll do it, and if not, we'll just wait till the auctions start up again.
A lot of traveling. You're gonna hit Florida. Yeah, I mean, obviously you're in Kentucky. We can hit Florida. You're going to come up here to visit the Big A in New York?
Yeah, I mean, with my schedule even before this, I was in Florida probably about 2 months a year. I go up to Saratoga every meet. So if anything, it'll change where I have to go down at Gulfstream a little bit more. And hopefully I can come up to New York some more too. So I mean, I'll definitely be on the move. And obviously the more horses we can accrue, the more I'll be moving around, which is always a fun thing to do.
Talking to Sean Feld, newest consultant for Little Red Feather Racing. What's the plan with Miss Temple City? Is she was sold, yeah? Do you know who they bred her to?
Yeah, she was sold in November. Last we heard, she was slated to go to Warfront. But that was, you know, that was what they said in November. I can't imagine them changing their minds, but I know I haven't like read it in print, but that was the last I heard. She's living the good life out at Claiborne, and we all can't wait to see her babies.
Yeah, she was she was an exceptional runner, and with her body style, she figures to be a tremendous broodmare as well. Warfront seems to be getting all the good mares. What's the deal there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. I mean, they run. I think the problem for us Americans is all the good ones tend to go to Europe, so they don't seem to be in the newspapers stateside. But he definitely throws really good runners, and obviously, probably, you know, a lot of Americans want to be more prominent with Royal Ascot. And if I was Lady Eli or Miss Temple City, and I wanted to have an Ascot shot, Warfront would be number one to breed to in the States for sure.
Yeah, Warfront double dipping on the Equine Forum this morning.
Yeah.
Lady Eli, Miss Temple City. I mean, really? How great it was. He's having a better morning than any of us.
Yeah.
Probably most mornings.
Yeah. No, it is pretty cool that, you know, Lady Eli obviously won the Eclipse Award and beat us a couple of times, but those are probably the best two race mares in recent history on the grass, and he gets to get both of them. It's pretty cool.
All right, well, Sean, best of luck with the new gig with Little Red Feather. I'm sure we'll be hearing more from them and you this year, and we'll talk to you down the line.
All right, sounds good. Talk to you guys later.
All right.
Sean Feld, newest consultant for Little Red Feather Racing. When we come back, one of the newest riders on the scene here at the Big A is Trevor McCarthy. He's sitting about 6 feet from me. He's been patiently waiting for his turn on the Equine Forum, and that comes up next. You're listening to the Equine Forum on HRN, your home for the 2018 Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Undefeated in sprint competition, Eclipse champion Run Happy captured 3 Grade 1 victories and set blistering speed records at both Keeneland and Saratoga. In the Breeders' Cup sprint, he dominated the world's fastest runners, going 6 furlongs in a record-breaking 108 and change. The only horse nominated for 3 Eclipse Awards, Run Happy was crowned champion male sprinter, all the while racing 100% drug-free. Champion, millionaire, record-breaker, Run Happy. Standing at Claiborne Farm.
Gulfstream's championship meet is in full stride with a record 94 stakes races worth $28.6 million in purses, highlighted by 12 Super Saturday programs, including the $16 million Pegasus World Cup on January 27th and the ExpressBet.com Florida Derby on March 31st. Every Saturday, come out early to enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream from 8 to 10:30, and be sure to register for the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship taking place January 26th and 27th with an estimated total prize pool of more than $500,000. For more information, visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Anthony Stabile and Jude Feld, picking winners.
All right, Pontica, who is this week's Naira Bet's best bet?
Well, I'm going to the Colonel E.R. Bradley, and I'm going to take number 5, Tower of Texas.
5, Tower of Texas at 7-2 first.
The Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Bets. Every Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219, XM 206, and streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Bruce Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And now Lareem is coming after True Timber. J-Boy Zet goes under the whip farther back. Apart from the crowd, has lost ground toward the rail. Top of the stretch. Here comes Ella Reeb coming after True Timber and taking charge and taking off by the eighth pole. Ella Reeb opens up by two. True Timber fights on second. J-Boy Zet on the outside is into third. Apart from the crowd is fourth. Down to the final 16th. And another impressive performance by Ella Reeb. Under the wire to win the Withers by four in the end. True Timber held second. J-Boy's Echo was third. It's tied for fourth. Bonus points or apart from the crowd.
Travis Stone on the call of the 2017 Withers. It was all Ella Reeb and his rider, Trevor McCarthy, going to join us in just a moment. But first, no stallion in my long memory has made a more sensational start at stud than Uncle Mo. Those were the words of John Sparkman in a recent column for the Daily Racing Form following another stellar weekend from the progeny of Coolmore America's Uncle Mo. The recently crowned leading third crop sire's skills were on display from coast to coast as he added two new graded stakes winners on turf and dirt. On the East Coast, Ultra Brat won the Grade 3 Marshall's River at Gulfstream, and out west, Mopetism won the Grade 2 La Cunada Stakes at Santa Anita. Uncle Mo's oldest crop has just turned five, and he has already sired 17 graded stakes winners. Sensational indeed. For more information on Uncle Mo and all their stallions, head to coolmore.com. Nice enough to be joined now by Trevor McCarthy, the newest addition to the riding colony here in the winter at the Big A. Trevor?
Hi, Anthony.
Jude Felt joining us down in Kentucky as well. Thanks for joining us this morning.
No, thanks for having me.
A lot going on in your career the past, year. Out with an injury for a while. We'll talk about that. And then the decision to come here. So why don't you take me through the last few months and coming back from the injury and making such a big decision to jump into the deep end of the pool up here in New York.
Coming back from my injury, it was a big task, you know. I was out for 7 months, a lot of physical therapy, rehab, getting back on horses, and, you know, then I
got... For the folks that don't know, what exactly were you rehabbing?
So I had a shoulder injury. I tore a labrum in my shoulder at Monmouth Park on May the 23rd, I believe. And I also broke my pinky finger on my right hand, so I had to get two surgeries. And my shoulder, I had two anchors. Anchors are they're called. And they stitched it up, and everything was good to go there. And with my finger, I had two rods in the finger, and they were removed shortly after my surgery. So, you know, I came back 100%. Everything feels great. No complaints, you know. So now I just started getting back on horses about Thanksgiving time. And I got a phone call before that to come here to New York to work with Steve Rushen. And I thought that was a really great opportunity for me to, you know, to become one of the elite riders here in New York. So I took the opportunity and now trying to run with it.
So the plan was to come to New York even before Arod left. Trevor's agent, Steve Rushing, also has Arod Ortiz Jr. The plan was to come before Arod even left, or did it escalate to getting you here a little earlier?
Actually, I had no desire to come to New York this year.
Okay.
And before Arod left for Florida, you know, it was a decision made by Steve that, you know, he wanted me to come to New York. It was okay with Arod, you know, for... you know, both of us to be riding here and having Steve work for the both of us as well, you know. You know, it seems like it's been great so far. Having Steve working with him, he seems like a really great guy, a great agent. And, you know, I just want to thank him for all the success I've had so far here in New York. And, you know, we'll see where it takes me.
What does that feel like when you go to a new place and you're embraced right away and you start winning races like you've been riding there for years? That's got to give you just a tremendous high.
Yes, it's a great confidence level, you know. I would have to describe it as, trying to look for the perfect word, but you know, you feel like you're on, you know, almost on top of the world, you know, especially a place here like New York, where the you know, there's so many successful jockeys and trainers and great horses. You know, it's great, and it feels so good to be back riding, you know, especially off such a long layoff of 7 months, and you know, to be welcomed here from all these trainers and owners and even the jockeys as well, and the commission. You know, everybody seems very welcoming, and it's great. I like it here so far.
Your dad, obviously, rider Mike McCarthy, he was a guest on Jock Talk recently with Christina McManigill. So obviously in the family. You said earlier, though, didn't really have the desire to come here this year until Steve made the call. Growing up, obviously you wanted to be a rider. Was your dream? Because, you know, some people don't have the elaborate dream of having. Some guys just want to ride. Some girls just want to ride. Is this a dream come true coming here to New York? And really, I mean, you've come here and you've made an impact immediately, which is very, very hard to do. I don't care who your agent is, what time of year it is, frankly, how good you are. It's hard to make an impact on any circuit, let alone arguably the toughest circuit in the country. Is this a dream come true for you?
Yes, most definitely. I think it's every jockey's dream come true, you know. I've always said that, you know, it would be great to go to New York, but I wasn't in any rush to do so. You know, when the time was right and when the right person would call, or, you know, the right opportunity would be there, I would go for it, you know. And it came a little quicker than I expected, but I feel that this opportunity working with Steve and also IRAD is a huge, huge plus.
Yeah, it helps to have a guy who went from Ramon Dominguez to Herod Ortiz Jr., and now you, you know, dominated certainly at the very top of the standings down in Maryland and Delaware. Is it hard to leave that, Trevor? Is it hard to leave a place where you are the top dog? And I know you were coming off the injury, but before the injury, is it hard to leave a place where you're the top dog and go to a place that you're almost certainly not going to be the top dog at the very least right away?
I would say it was hard in a way. Yes, definitely. It was hard to leave all that business. I had great business there. Rode for awesome trainers, you know. Everybody there in Maryland, they're very generous and nice people, welcoming. You know, they give everybody a chance, and owners as well. And, you know, my agent Scotty, he did an awesome job for me down there. And I would say in all the Mid-Atlantic and everywhere we raced, you know, he was a great agent as well. Very hardworking, and, you know, we went everywhere and won, whether it was Kentucky, here in New York, in Florida, or just around the Mid-Atlantic. And same to all the trainers, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic. I would have to say, you know, it's a big thank you to them, because without them, I don't think I would have made it here to New York, you know, with this opportunity I had, especially from, you know, so many trainers that have been with me since day one that, you know, have really had confidence in me. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to my agent, my ex-agent, Scott Silver.
Yeah, Scotty did a great job. One or two guys or gals down in the Mid-Atlantic you want to acknowledge that really stayed with you from day one?
I would say one huge guy, you know, from day one would be Grand Motion. You know, I had my first gallop job for him when I was the age of 15. And he put me on my first racehorse, you know, first race ever, amateur race down at Pimlico. And, you know, when I started out riding with the Bug, you know, he threw me a couple bones. And, you know, I won my first graded stakes for him with a filly named Fortune Pearl, who ran in the Delaware Oaks, won that. And then I rode my first grade one for him at Saratoga and rode her in the Alabama Stakes that summer. So I have to give him a huge amount of credit. I would say another trainer would be Cal Lynch, you know. I've rode many stake winners for him, many winners for him. Nice horses, you know, ever since, you know, even he was training in Philadelphia and then he, you know, moved down to Maryland, which, you know, I really kind of got running with him there. So a lot of credit goes to him too. But, you know, there's just so many trainers to really thank that have stuck with me for so long. You know, I can go down a mile-long list.
I saw the smile creep across your face when the Yellow Reeb when the Yellow Reeb rejoin was playing when we came on, back on the air. You have, a, I mean, and you have the world ahead of you. But do you have a favorite moment in your career so far?
I would have to say that Weather Stakes. That was a top moment for me. Well, you know what a huge race he ran that day, and it was just it's an awesome feeling when you have a horse. You know, he wins the Drome, and he comes back, and he wins the Withers, and, you know, that confidence level for the horse, the trainer, the jockey as well. You just think to yourself, man, do I really have a good horse here? You know, can you make it to the Derby? It's everybody's dream, you know. Like you said, it's a lot of jockeys' dreams to, you know, ride in the New York circuit, but also to make it to the Derby or Breeders' Cup or, you know, even, you know, some of the biggest races in the world, you know. So it was like, man, wow, what a huge accomplishment that was. So I'd have to say that's a highlight.
And our game is so relationship oriented. The people that you come in contact with and the relationships you develop over the years, and a guy like you that's been successful, that has a great work ethic, that wants to better himself. I mean, you're in a really good spot now because you're going to meet more trainers, ride for more trainers, have those top mounts available to you, and that's got to be super exciting.
Yes, for the most part, it's very exciting, you know, and I'm grateful, you know. It's a huge privilege to be here.
Plan to stick it out? You going to stay?
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, we'll see how the winter goes, and, you know, if everything's going forward and doing well, then I would love to stay, yes.
Saratoga? You start to dream about Saratoga?
Yeah, that'd be a great feeling, you know. So, you know, knock on wood, you know, everything goes well, and I can make it there.
Does thinking about Saratoga help you on some of these cold mornings? I know you were telling me you're living on the South Shore of Long Island like I do. That wind can pick up here in the morning now.
You know, it's Laurel's just as bad, I would say.
Really?
You know, it gets cold down there as well, but, you know, I know I just kind of got to stick it out and just work hard. It was the other morning, it was about maybe a week, 2 weeks ago, it was like -7 degrees with the wind chill, and I was out working for Rudy, and he's out there with us, and I worked seven horses that morning for him, and I'm like, man, it's cold, but you know what? I'm just so happy to be here, and you know, I'm going to just keep doing it, and, you know, you can't complain. You just gotta keep working and keep loving it, you know. It's just like, you know, why are you going to complain about something that you've been dying to do for, you know, since you were a kid? You know, yeah, I've always been wanting to be here, and now that I'm here, I'm not going to complain about it, even if it's -7 degrees.
Well, with that work ethic, you'll be just fine, my friend. All right, Trevor, thanks for some time this morning. We'll let you get down to the room and get ready for the card today. One more break. When we come back, June and I will wrap this edition of the Equine Forum. And, of course, Trevor, like all of our guests, will get some power from Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion over at embracetherace.com. One more break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Castleton Lions, home to multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and blue-blooded sprinter Justin Phillip, who was recently represented by his first stakes winner at Belmont Park.
Down to the line, what a catch takes the Rockville Center over Morning Breeze.
That game stakes victory by What a Catch comes on the heels of Justin Phillips' daughter, Upset Brewing, putting in a strong runner-up finish in the $100,000 debutante at Churchill Downs. And while Justin Phillip continues his fast start, seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance.
And Sir Dudley Diggs from Amiz Gizmo. Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
Dreyfong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dreyfong's the leader. Dreyfong has won.
Gio Ponti and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
Jimmy John's World's Greatest Gourmet Sandwiches, Ed speaking.
Yes, I need a sandwich delivery right away.
What kind of sandwich?
I don't care. Just get it to 215 Elm Street right now.
I'm on my way!
Jimmy John's.
Thanks for getting here so fast.
You're welcome, sir. Here's your sandwich. By the way, did you know your house is on fire?
That's why I called Jimmy John's.
Fire makes you hungry?
No, I knew you'd get here fast. Grab a bucket.
We're going to need more than two guys, sir.
You're right. What do we do?
Leave it to me, sir.
Hello,
boss. Send everyone you got to 215 Elm.
Okay.
Doesn't matter what kind of sandwich, sir. I'll explain later.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Jimmy John's.
Come in. Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your house is on fire?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you know?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Jimmy John's.
Come in.
Sir, did you?
Yes, I did. Grab a bucket.
Fire department.
Come in.
Sir, did you know your...
It's okay, Captain. We got it handled. Care for a sandwich?
Thanks, but tell me something.
Shoot.
Why didn't you call the fire department first?
I did.
Jimmy John's. Exceptional delivery. Order online at jimmyjohns.com.
Power.
Carrick Condi, the favorite in front. The Spaniard, News Al Canarias, is fighting back. Carrick Condi has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Carrick Condi winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Carrick Condi with a rush on the outside goes Bangham. Late run from Adam Dahl. Carrick Condi and O'Dahl. Carrick Condi.
Gainsway stallion Carrick Condi, the regally bred Breeders' Cup mile winner, recorded three Grade 1 victories on his way to earning more than $1.9 million. A precocious juvenile, Carrick Condi recorded a Grade 1 win at 2 before taking the prestigious French 2000 Guineas at 3, followed by an electrifying stretch run in the Breeders' Cup mile to defeat older horses with a final time of 1:32 and 4/5. Carrick Condi's first weanling sold for up to $250,000 with an average of more than $68,000. Carrick Condi, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, I'm Kayla Stratt, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. The Big A, that's me, the Pontiff, that's him, wrapping things up on a Saturday morning. Don't forget, when we're done here in about 4 minutes, head on over to the Horse Racing Radio Network, horseracingradio.net, or stay there if you're listening to us on the live stream. Take a listen to the Weekend Stakes Preview presented by Naira Betts in podcast form. 11 stakes races to be had this weekend across the country. Two in a row for the Pontiff on the best bets. We'll see if he can make it three in a row. All right, Pontiff, you got to answer the poll question too. If we were wrapping this Equine Forum up on Derby Day, who would you be betting today?
Well, I would say Instilled Regard would be my horse.
Wow. That much of an impression last week in the LeCompte, huh?
I tell you, I got a warm and fuzzy feeling watching him run. Doesn't happen very often. I've seen a lot of races. We've talked about this many times. I mean, you know, more races than most people will ever see in their lifetime. I've seen them already. And so I don't know how much longer I've got to live, but, you know, I might be able to double it by the end of my life. But I tell you, that horse, he looked really good to me. He just gave me that, you know, man, I'm really good impression. And so that's where I'd go. You said today might be different tomorrow, but yeah, I like that horse. I'm gonna be staying very close to him. How about you?
I felt the same about Mask
and
the Mucho Macho Man. The way he just flowed over the, he was just so fluid. And you know, I'm not so sure he even wants to be on a lead. He just exerted his class that day. I got a feeling that he's just going to relish the distance. And when he has a target or two in front of him, I think he's going to be that much better. So I'd be betting Mask if the Kentucky Derby were in
8 hours as opposed to 15 weeks. A lot can change, like we said, Pontiff, so we'll enjoy the ride. And you can join us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network on that ride. First live broadcast next Saturday. That's when you'll hear the Pontiff. Again, well, you hear him with trainer talk on Wednesday night, but you'll hear him live again next Saturday. Jude, great job as always. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
All right, on behalf of Jude Feld and our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm the Big A. Have a great weekend, folks. Have a lucky weekend. I hope you win all your photo finishes. Jude, you got something you want to say?
Good night, Barbados.